What's up, guys? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Angler's Happy Hour podcast. In this episode, we talk trolling motors, eating rods, falling into the lake, tidal water fishing, and we finish with a great conversation with Major League Fishing Pro Mark Daniels Jr. Stick around. What's going on, guys? Thanks for jumping onto the Angler's Happy Hour podcast. Got the usual crew around the table here. We've got Nick. He's back. What's going on, man?
Guess who's back? Back again. Not much, man. How you guys doing?
Doing good.
We're just here shivering in Josh's garage. It's winter in Phoenix all of a sudden. What's it like, 45 degrees out there?
Yeah, winter happens like 2 days.
Yeah, right. And 45 degrees is our winter.
Yeah.
That's true. I told Chantel, my wife, earlier we're coming out, and she's like, it's cold. Are you guys going to be okay? I'm like, I think Rob and I will be fine, but Nick might get a little cold.
Yeah, that's right, man. I'm thin-blooded, and I'm not sponsored, so I just need to mooch off of some of your gear. So if you could just pass some of that over here, it'd be great.
What does not sponsored have to do with it?
Anyway, hey, man, I don't have warm clothes, man.
Oh, got you. Okay.
We had that episode about winter clothes, and it's like, hey, this is...
They are for sale also.
I know, right? At a slight 15% discount.
Hey, yeah. He is wearing my jacket, one of my jackets. He had to pick it up out of the garage.
And so it's toasty. I could warm some bread under this thing. This is nice.
He came in with kind of like a designer looking, what is that, sport coat or something, dude?
Dude, someone's got to bring some class to this podcast. I mean, like, this is, you know, outdoor oriented.
Skype
was
going to be video, huh?
Yeah, that's right. I had to,
exactly.
Yeah,
no
spoiler
kidding.
Alert for Mark Daniels. I thought we were going to all see each other. I wanted him to think, you know, when you wear a sports coat, it's like people take you serious. I'm wearing shorts and flip-flops underneath it, but right. They can't see that.
Little did everyone know there's no video. We were all sitting there Indian style in my office without chairs, hovering around the laptop talking to Mark.
It's grassroots, man. We got your chihuahua in my lap and hear your kids in the background. That's how you know it's a good time.
That's awesome. And Rob, what's going on with you, man?
Not a whole lot. Just getting ready to go on. I've been scouting all fall, getting ready to go on Boyd's Elk Hunt. Starts the day after Thanksgiving.
Is that grease under your fingernails I see over there?
It actually is. It doesn't happen very often, but I Saturday my alternator burned up in my truck. I couldn't figure out what that electric smell was, and
it's never good though, right? Whenever you smell hot electric smells, it's.
But thank goodness the diesels have two batteries, and I was able to have enough battery power to drive to Payson.
Is that a little bit of a clenched white knuckle experience driving back into town, knowing that you're just riding on whatever residuals in your batteries?
Yeah, I was watching my little voltmeter
just
go
down. Going down faster than the gas tank.
So I had no idea what I was going to do. My initial plan was I pulled into a parts store. I thought maybe I can get a battery charger and charge them up and get it home and fix it. And that wasn't going to happen because they needed me to take my batteries out of my truck to charge them individually for like an hour and a half each. So
yeah. Plan
just,
B.
Yeah, I just bought an alternator, charged the one battery, put the alternator in the parking lot. Typical, I don't know what you call that.
Hey, that's just getting her done right there, man. I admire that. I don't think Josh and I, we would have been like Ubering. Do they have Ubers with tow hitches?
I definitely needed it.
In the mountains on dirt roads?
Yeah, right.
But it was like 30 degrees in the morning, too. I'm out there below freezing, changing the alternator. Got it changed. Took me about an hour and a half. The one battery they charged was enough to start the truck and drove home. It was
that's
all good.
Impressive, man.
Yeah, I was pretty stoked.
Dude, and you've got, what, is that 2011?
Yeah.
2,500 Dodge Ram?
Yeah.
With 600,000 miles on it?
No, 225,000.
That's what's so tight about that, though, is that, like, that's longevity, man. Yeah. I mean, okay, so you're going to have to do some repairs at some point, but, I mean, how many Toyota Priuses have gone in the trash can by 225,000 miles? That'd be like the fourth generation, I think.
Yeah, my son and I were talking about it yesterday. If we could just put that motor into a new truck around it, I'd be dialed.
Right, and that's always been the dig on Dodge, right? Is that like just, the drivetrain's going strong and everything else is rattled
apart.
And falling off of it?
I just think trucks last longer than cars because you're. I mean, you use that reference, but dude, how many Tacomas? Toyota Tacomas are still rolling around with 400,000 miles on them. 2000s, 2001s, man.
That's one of like the holy grails, right? If you go back a little bit farther, I think it's called the 22RE. That was like the OG Toyota Tacoma.
Yep.
Those little square body ones. And that, I honestly think that's like a million mile motor.
But you don't see it in cars. Like, I don't know if I'm crazy or not. Are there cars that last that long?
Yeah, maybe some Toyota Camrys and stuff like that.
My wife just got a new vehicle and her Camry had 180,000 miles on it. drove like it was brand new.
Nope. Dude, it didn't look that old. No. What year was it?
It was an 08.
Wow.
Yep, it was impressive.
Props to her for that.
Yeah. And there's some designed obsolescence in things, right? Like whether they want to admit it or not, I really do. I think there are certain things that they know that they can skimp on. And then, you know, technology is amazing too, though. Like when you go internally into engines nowadays, that there's just like between the oil that we use for lubricants plus just like the metallurgy and the things that, like that part of it's good, but then all the computers and things like that take a crap on you, and those cost more to fix than that vehicle ends up being worth.
Yeah, 20 years ago, 100,000 miles was a kiss of death for the most
part. Right, that was where like you've reached the...
Yeah, nowadays. So anyhow, I was pretty proud of myself to be able to change the alternator.
How many tools did you have? Were you working like a pair of pliers and butter knife? Or how'd
no,
you pull
I have
that
one
off?
Little ratchet set that I bought, and it's like the 40-piece set, right?
Nice. Still impressive, man. And
that's,
a leather
that's
man,
like
right?
The one I get from my parents for Christmas, dude.
Yeah, that's what I had. I carried around my truck. I carried around my Polaris Ranger.
Well, if this podcast doesn't work out, dude, I think mobile mechanics in your future.
For sure. Yeah. I might have to get a couple more tools, but
I don't know. It doesn't sound like it.
Yeah. He could just do alternators, though. He could be the alternator guy.
Specialist.
He's got the tools for
there
that.
There we go. Yep.
What's up with you, Josh? What? Tell us about your exciting life of fishing all the time, living the dream.
Yeah. I actually don't think I fished this week. I really don't think I did. I've been getting my boat ready to sell and move into my new boat. So I've been cleaning that up. I went to the Coyotes game, the local NHL team.
I thought you had
team.
A birthday, right?
Yeah,
happy
it was my
belated.
Birthday.
Oh,
and,
happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you very much. My wife got some tickets, so we had a blast there, man. Hockey is just the coolest sport to go watch in person. You know, I've been a big hockey fan since I was a kid, and over the last several years, it's faded a little bit just because I've been so busy. But I don't know, man. I've had this resurgence in hockey this winter. And, dude, I've been watching every game. And a lot of it has to do with I've been lucky to be home over the last couple months for the most part where I can catch a lot of the games. And the Coyotes are doing well.
He doesn't say, so how are we this year? Are we
looking
good?
They, you know, we're still looking for our first Stanley Cup. Never been to the Stanley Cup Finals. So, and I don't know if we're... You know
that
type of team
yet,
but they're very good and they're very entertaining. They've got a really young team, a lot of talent, and they're I think second in their division and probably in the entire NHL, maybe the fifth or sixth most points in the league. You know, as far as you get 2 points for a win, 1 point for a overtime loss. So they're doing really well and they're fun to watch, man. It's fun to go to the game. There were no fights or anything, but. Rob said your buddy was at the game the game before, and there was a massive fight. I watched it on YouTube.
Yeah, my buddy Les was right up next to the glass. Him and his son and his wife.
He was getting like the splatter from it.
Dude, he was so stoked about it. He was going off.
It was
cool.
I rewatched it after he told me about it. I went and found it, and the goalies normally don't get involved, and the Coyotes goalie Darcy Kemper grabbed. I guess one of the players from the other team got up in his grill a little bit and you know you're not really supposed to touch the goalie, goalie's covering the puck and you start jabbing your stick around his gloves and fingers and stuff like that. That's just not cool, man. He's playing hard but
getting ready to
they
get
can't
a
protect
fist in
themselves
your face.
You know, and a lot of times, you know, teams have players to protect the goalies and maybe the line on the ice or whatever, just they didn't have any of their big boys, so the goalie took it into his own hands. The guy was facing the other way, the guy from I can't remember who they were playing, but put him in a headlock and just threw him to the ice, dude. And everything exploded. Within 10 seconds, the goalie from the other team was in the crease.
Over there,
yeah. And they were all fighting, dude.
So I'm not super up on, like, the rules of hockey. So when a knockdown, drag-out brawl happens like that, is the penalty box just filled with people and then it's like one-on-three or something after that? Or how do they sort that
That's
out?
That's a good question. And you know, I believe they have a rule where you can never have less than three men on
the
ice at once for
team
each
in the
team.
Box.
Yeah. So I'm sure the guys that instigate get the penalties in that, and I don't know what they did in that circumstance.
They sort out, though, like the biggest perpetrators, and then they hit the box.
I think if it and I totally could be wrong on this. I'm 75% sure I'm right on
this.
This
is like when we talk about NASCAR, right?
If you got three penalties, I think the first two penalties will be served together, and then as soon as one runs out, the next one begins.
Okay.
So they may all be sitting in the penalty box, but I think
it's
they still have three guys on
there.
The ice. But maybe some hockey fans on there will either give us a bad review now or preferably in the comment section, just enlighten us. Exactly.
Yeah. Please help us be less ignorant. We're pretty ignorant up here.
But it was fun, man. On the fishing side, not too much going on. We're just kind of, we've got this big, in Arizona, we've got this big kind of winter storm that we had last week, our first storm to really kick the fish into winter gear. So we're stoked for a winter bite. I was talking to a buddy of mine, a local tournament angler, really good guy who listens to the show. He heard our U.S. Open episode, and he told me a pretty funny story from the Open himself. Wanted to share it with you guys and see if you had any similar experiences. I'm going to try to get this story right. He is fishing the Open as a AAA, as a non-boater, and he draws a younger angler, says he's a great stick. He wasn't having, I don't think they had a great day of fishing, but he said the guy was, he could tell he's just going to be a really good angler moving forward. But Jeff, it's my buddy Jeff. Jeff's in the back of the boat, and he hooks a fish, and his boater is netting his fish, and as he's netting his fish, he gets it in the boat, and his rod just fly, the boater's rod that he just left on the deck with his line in the water flies out of the boat, just flies out of the boat.
Did you get a bite, or it's like
so
snagged and
Jeff's
thrown away from it?
Instant reaction, dude, is to just go for it. That's how he is. He's just a competitive guy, and you know, he's in his mind, it's a 4-pounder on the end of this line.
Yeah.
And dude, he doesn't even think twice. Doesn't, no thought, just dives into the water. And as he's in midair, already out of the boat, like where it's too late, the guy, his motor goes, oh crap, it was just in my trolling motor. It was, he had his trolling motor on spot lock. His trolling motor's on spot lock, and it ate his line. So it sucked his rod in. But Jeff remembers it so vividly. He goes, dude, I was in midair, about to touch the water, and I can just hear in slow motion, crap, it's in my trolling motor.
Have you had that happen with the spot lock?
I was warned because our buddy Scooter had one chew up one of his rods.
Oh, I had one just a couple months ago, like literally fly out of the boat. I mean, they go quick.
That's what.
Oh yeah.
Did you lose it?
No, I was fortunate. I caught it quick enough that it didn't. The rod did not get into the trolling motor, but the line was all up in it.
That's when you find out quickly what 110 pounds of thrust does, right?
Oh, in a
pulls
hurry.
Like yellowfin tuna.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, yeah, so I'm sure it would have happened to me. I've had my line in my trolling motor a million times, but after hearing Scooter's story, I always, dude, I reel in now. If I'm going to put it on spot lock, I reel in because it's going to happen.
Yeah.
If you leave
Not
your
if,
line in the
but
water,
when.
Yeah, it will find your line. That will happen.
Yeah. Did
Jeff?
Yeah. Did he have his phone in his pocket? Or
yeah,
anything?
Please tell us. He has
I don't
a new
think
iPhone
so.
11.
Yeah, he didn't That's say that that happened. Thankfully, yeah. But you know, dude, I love those guys. His instant reaction is to do this. Like,
Team player, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, same thing happened. I was on a sponsor trip, like a sponsor summit for Berkeley. We were up in Minnesota a few summers ago, and we're just getting a bunch of content. Like, they had a few of the pros out, and we're doing videos and stuff. And the final day of this thing, when we're all done, we're on these awesome lakes where we're just catching the crap out of them. It's such good fishing. You can't go wrong up there. And we have a little tournament. And I've got basically my boss. He's my buddy, but he's essentially my boss over there in my boat. And he's a very good fisherman. He fishes a lot of tournaments and just a really good fisherman. Younger guy, actually a couple years younger than me. And we're fishing, and something similar happens. Like, we get a fish in the boat, and we're monkeying around with the net, and same thing happens. Rod goes flying into the water, and he doesn't even think twice, and he jumps into the water, dives head first, and picks up the rod, and there's nothing. I don't know how the rod fell in the water. It was, like, snagged or something, and he gets it back. But, dude, the irony here is, I mean, we were in, like, 2 feet of water.
Ooh.
We could have just reached over and got it. And I'm like, what are you doing, man? What are you doing?
Yeah, he stands up.
He did stand up. It was barely, not even to his waist, man. So
so this is stories of people who, you know, are like trying to do the right thing and hooking it up. Do you guys have any funny stories about someone who's like unintentionally goes in the drink? Because I just had one pop in my head.
Oh, yeah. And let me finish this one because we're not even close to done with this one. Yeah, for sure. So he's standing there. And I'm like, oh, my God, dude, I can't believe that happened. And he starts taking his phones, plural, out of his pocket because he's got his work phone. He's got his regular takes both of his phones out of his pocket. We have to go back to the truck, and I've got some dry clothes in the truck. So he changes out. The phones somehow made it, dude. And one of them wasn't. They maybe were both iPhones, and iPhones don't make it. But yeah, he said they make it. So, of course, he's traveling. It would have been a nightmare to have to replace phones traveling just in the middle of nowhere in Minnesota. He's got, you know, 100 emails to respond to every day.
Yeah.
Nightmare. But his phone survived. But so we get to talking, and this is not the first time. He's that type of guy. He's like Jeff, dude, where he's going in the water. If he thinks it's going to help him win the tournament, he's going in the water. Same thing happened. He actually made when he was in college fishing. If you go back about, I don't know, 8, 9 years, 10 years, he was in college fishing, and he made a SportsCenter not top 10.
No kidding.
The National College Championship.
What?
With the same thing, dude. His this was a televised event, you know, one of the first televised college events. And I'll have to throw the link in there so we can all watch this. And he's going to be so pissed.
Dude, that's a resume builder right there.
It is. He's known for that. So, yeah. But I didn't know it. So all this happens. And then we get back to our little weigh-in and we're talking about it. And they're like, again? You did it again? He's just, that's just
that's
him,
his trademark.
Dude.
It is.
That's awesome.
Wow. Yeah, that seriously, that would be at the top of my resume. If I wasn't like trying to get a job in the fishing industry, I'd be like, bro, I've been on SportsCenter. Like, I did it. Not top 10, but it's still a top 10.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Hey,
that's,
I mean,
tight.
It's you don't see fishing on SportsCenter every day.
You got to do
once
something
or twice
worthwhile.
A year. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Where were you going with your deal, dude?
So I remember a long time ago, my brother used to live in Florida. He went to community college. He went to the Florida Keys Community College. If that's not the sweetest place to go to college, I don't know what is. Probably got like a political science associate's degree there, something super useless. But anyways, we were he went down there mostly for fishing like anyone would. And down there, it's a lot of, you know, it's like Key West specifically. There's a little bit of offshore fishing and there's a little bit of like deeper water, but most of it's all flats fishing. And so we had fallen in love with that place as kids growing up. We'd gone there quite a bit. And so we got linked up with a guide early on who ended up becoming somebody. His name's Tom Roland. And I think he had a show for a little while, Saltwater
I've heard
Experience.
Of him.
And
yep.
Really, really cool guy. And he, you know, he was the Rob Vanderkoy of the Florida Keys. I mean, that was like his background.
He's a real deal, dude.
Dude, he is OG legit. And so, you know, he's got like a 12 and an 8-year-old in his boat. We were young. I don't know how old I was. My brother's 4 years older than me. And when you're little, dude, all you want to do is catch a shark, right? Like if you ask any third grader what's the coolest fish to catch, it'd be like a great white, right? So we're with this like high-powered guide and we're in one of the channels. It was actually like a big channel. It's called Boca Grande. And like it's a pretty decent stretch of deeper water that gets some weather in it. And then on the other side is this group of islands called the Marquesas. And the Marquesas is amazing, right? Like tarpon, permit, fishing, just off the charts. So we're shark fishing in Boca Grande Channel and we've got a barracuda cut in half. You know, you half fillet it and then you flop it over the side and then that chums up the sharks. And we're on his flat skiff. So there's a poling platform above the engine, right? And that's where they stand and they pole. And they don't have a trolling motor, right? So you're pulling. And dude, he took a wrong step and off the back he went, dude. And like, splash, falling from like 3 or 4 feet up in the air. And so my brother and I turn around, you know, we're like, what just happened?
And you're in the boat by yourself now.
Yeah, dude. No longer did he splash, right? And he was back in the boat, like blink of an eye, right? And he's just like soaking wet. And we're like bewildered. We're like, dude, what happened? And he's like, if you fell off the boat, you'd want to get back in that fast too. I have seen some sharks in this channel that are massive. And so lo and behold, dude, like every now and then, I don't know if it's an annual thing, but every couple of years, they will actually get like a rogue white shark that'll cruise up the Boca Grande Channel because it's like the feeder outlet of all those shallow areas. That's as it's kind of coming back. And dude, it left an impression on me that like he landed and was back in the boat like instantly, like that loud of a splash, maybe because you have a barracuda kind of marinating out there. Like there were some big finned friendlies swimming around down there and he wasn't going to be mistaken
Sounds like it wasn't his first time either.
He did it gracefully, right? Yeah. I was like,
he knew what he was doing.
The Swedish judge gave him a 9-2. But yeah, that was funny.
He knows the danger, dude. If anyone knows if it's truly dangerous or not, if the guide gets back in the boat that quick,
you
swim.
Follow suit. Well, you know, like the mind-blowing thing there is that, you know, tarpon get big, and it's a common thing that like a fish pushing 100 pounds or more gets 2/3 of it eaten by a shark while you're trying to reel it in. You know, that's just mind-blowing. So the splash of a tarpon jumping probably sounds like a 180-pound dude falling off a poling platform.
Yeah, his iPhone didn't even get wet
because
he was
right.
So quick. Have you ever had a client go in, Josh? Nick?
I don't think so, dude. Not unintentional. Oh, yeah, one time, dude. One time. Yeah, but have you?
Yeah, I actually had a guy. He's a regular customer of mine. He comes out in the springtime. He'll come out every Tuesday for a half-day trip for like 3 months. And his name's Mark. He's a big guy, retired park ranger, super nice guy. He and I have developed a really good friendship. And one day he casts, and the rod just comes out of his hand, and he decides to follow the rod over the side of the boat. And I look back, and he's in the water. I mean, and I freaked out. I didn't know what to do, right? I was just like, so I go back there and just grab his hand, because we're literally in the middle of the lake out on an edge, you know. But we finally got him back in the boat. It was
a little bit of a rodeo there for a moment.
Yeah, it was a big rodeo, but the little ladder that comes out of the back of my boat, we got that. But he
got some use.
Yeah, it was a scary little moment. Yeah.
Well, that's cool of him to be interested. Well, he was fishing with your gear.
Did he intentionally go in though, or did he just?
A lack of grace.
He ended up getting the rod. The rod went in the water, and he just leaned over the boat, got the rod.
And then just went ahead and went.
Yeah, he
with
just
it.
Had too much momentum going. <I gotcha. laughs> Not enough stop.
Oh, like the slow motion. Those are the best too. Yeah.
That is. I mean, that's freaky, dude. If you don't know how to swim and you got clothes on and you freak out.
Yeah.
So we get him back. We finally get him back in the boat and everything's calm. And I'm like, Mark, today's not a good day to swim.
Yeah.
So we got a chuckle out of it, right? I remind him every time we go fishing not to go swimming. So.
Yeah, as you can tell, we're pretty hard on people that we like. I think it'd probably be a bad thing if any of us are quiet or not beating up on somebody. That's when they should be worried, right?
Oh,
we beat up the hardest
someone's
on
not
our
getting
friends.
Their balls busted. There's trouble.
That's right. Fishing. That's fishing, hanging out with the guys. You know?
The fraternity of fishing.
100%. 100%. And it was April, you said, so it wasn't that cold.
It wasn't terrible cold. Yeah, it was probably
70.
April. Yeah. Not bad.
Yeah, but. I mean, that's not comfortable.
Yeah, but. I had another guy cast. The rod came out of his hand, and he literally just dove after it. I think he hit the water before the rod.
Team player, dude.
Oh, yeah.
That's
awesome. Team.
That's a
and it was like, that was at Apache in February, so that was
cold. My gosh. Okay. I don't think I'd do it, you know?
I wouldn't, no.
Yeah, I'd just let it go.
Yep. You get that thing with clients where, you know, if you cast a spinning reel a certain weird way, like the bail will click closed all of a sudden,
just
and then
rips
it just
rips it out of your hand.
Boom, and it's gone.
100%. Yeah, especially if you got one hand on it. You know, I'm always recommending casting with two hands for a bunch of reasons, but that's one of the many reasons, you know. My one guy that fell out, and, you know, not to, you know, I get it, man. You fall in the water, you get disoriented, but this guy had probably had he had had a couple drinks, and he
says
which is rare on our boat. You know, like probably, I don't know, 5% of the trips we do, people actually drink. They're usually out there to fish pretty seriously, but it was part of a group trip, and fishing was not high on his priority list. He was just
95% of group trips drink.
Yeah, correct. All of the seriousness goes out the window.
Yeah, the group trips they drink, and on the singles they don't. Right. Good point. But I remember him. I could still see him coming up. He goes in. He just, I don't know, he truly followed his cast. Like, it was like a thing of beauty, dude. It was unintentional, but it was a thing of beauty. It was like just an art form, dude. He just
like
made the cast
and
his whole body, his whole body just gracefully goes into the water, dude. He comes up holding his hat, and he's like, I lost my hat. I lost my hat. And I'm like, I know the rod's like not in his hand. He thought he was holding the rod, but he was holding the hat.
Oh man!
I'm like, no, you got your hat, man. It's in your hand.
How about my rod?
Yeah, what about that $300 piece of equipment slowly sinking down to the bottom?
It happens, dude. It's rare enough that whatever, dude. I mean,
it just is what it is, man. It's one of the hazards.
Bite the bullet.
Yeah,
100%. I had a guy one time. He did like a sidearm cast. I had the rod. It's my fault for not strapping him down on the front deck with someone who doesn't fish all the time. He just did like a sidearm cast and his hook. Grabbed all the rods and slung all the rods into the water. And we're only in like 15 feet of water, but the grass was so thick, the milfoil was so thick that they stuck in like little toothpicks. So they were vertical. So you couldn't like drag a spoon through and a treble hook through and get them. They were all just like sticking up. So we didn't get any of them back. It was three or four rods.
Kidding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy cow.
Dude, did that guy feel horrible? Or was he just kind of like, meh?
I don't know, dude. It was one of those, it was a rare trip. It was one of those rare trips that, like, I think he got the trip on some discounted deal. And
it was a Groupon client, probably, right?
It may have been, actually, dude. And
that's when you gently nudge the sign that says tips are appreciated.
Here's the funny part. I got no tip.
No tip.
Yep. So and it is what it is. It bothered me that day, but I was over it pretty quick.
And now we're laughing about it, making millions on our podcast, so it's all good. But yeah, right. Right. The joke's on him. Yeah, now.
It got us here to this point.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't know. And then have you guys fallen in yourselves?
I'm sure I have. I'm trying to think of something juicy and hilarious. I mean, I do stupid stuff all day, every day. I'm sure I've fallen in, but nothing's popping to mind.
Right on.
Yeah, I fell in a long time ago. I don't even really remember the story, but a couple times. One chasing a rod, another one trying to unsnag something, and it's been a while. Thank goodness.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I've never fallen in on a guide trip. That would suck if the guide falls in.
What about like trying to get onto the boat from the dock? Have you guys ever witnessed that? I have a friend, a close friend who, like, she actually broke a couple of ribs, and it was no bueno. It got scary there for a moment. But that's another one of those dicey areas, especially as a guide, right? When you have people who aren't, you know, super familiar with that. Like, well, and you told the story, I think, on the podcast about that gnarly monsoon storm you were trying to, like, that's another one of those dicey transition zones.
Very
where
dangerous.
People get wet, best case, and hurt, worst case.
Yeah. I mean, you see it all the time. I don't think it's happened to me, but we've all got friends that have done it. And
you get into that weird, like, in-between zone where you think you, like, have enough strength to, like, hold on to the dock or go to the boat, and then you have neither.
It's just slowly separating, yeah. And you're doing the split.
And it's over. That was sadly what happened to her, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, our buddy lost. He's listening to the podcast, and we won't say who he is, but he lost a set of keys. He hates Roosevelt Lake because he lost his buddy's set of keys.
And I think his girlfriend had to deliver the second
yep.
set of keys,
his,
right?
His,
and it was in the salt
girlfriend.
End.
Yes, dude, 100%. Yep. So, it happens, dude.
Yeah, well, I mean, follies are, no one's, you know, immune to them. They happen to everyone.
Oh, yeah. I fell into the Sabine River, and I was like your guide.
Yeah, there's
that's
all
one
sorts
of those
scary
places where,
things in there.
Yeah, it's you know, you don't go 30 minutes without seeing something that you don't want to come across in the water. So yeah.
That reminds me of a story where I fell in on the Red River.
You
Louisiana.
Fell into the Red River.
I did. Yeah, I went in this cut on my trolling motor on, looking as I was going back, and I see this stump. Have I told this story on here before?
I don't think so.
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, anyhow, I saw this stump, and I made a mental note of the stump. Like, when I come out, don't hit the stump, right? So I'm on my troll motor on high looking for the stump. I didn't see it, but my troll motor found it.
Yeah.
Boat
there
stopped,
it
and I did not.
Oh,
so,
did you bend the shaft of the troll motor?
Toasted the troll motor.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's the same deal when I blew up my outboard. It was a nightmare. It was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I should have just
trying
stayed
to figure
home.
That one out.
Yeah. That's the one where Brett said when I threw my phone against
the
wall.
Yeah, we were laughing so hard because when we had Brett on the podcast, we told a couple stories from that trip. But then after we turned the mics off, Brett's like, dude, that's the one you threw your phone against the wall and broke it. You're so pissed. We're laughing.
Rob can be kind of the quiet, silent type. So when Rob starts to smoke, apparently that's his tell.
Yeah.
Things get smashed.
Oh, yeah. It got immediately, I knew it was a dumb
Everybody
move.
Reaches their breaking point. Yeah. When you're on a long trip with buddies, right? Like at one point in time, if you spend enough time together driving.
But that had nothing to do with buddies. That was all me. I was just, I just had bad luck, and I put myself in the position to get bad luck, I guess, at that point.
No, dude, no. Hey,
on that deal I did, it was bad, but
That's super. I mean, that's a common thing. If you're 6 inches to the left or right, dude, that doesn't happen. Your tournament could have been totally different. That's one of the, such a fragile sport, man.
Yep.
And you had a lot riding on that tournament, I'm sure, because it was your first year fishing the top 150s, right?
Yeah, I think it was top 150s,
So, I mean, dude, that's, you know, those first few tournaments are crucial for you, so I don't blame you for
You definitely have a
upset about that.
An overwhelming feeling when you're in that position, you know, and I wasn't, I didn't have a long enough plan to make it work, you know. I think I needed to have stayed back there longer. I think I'd have done okay, but, you know, I just didn't have a good plan going in. So
makes sense.
Yeah.
But Brett was laughing. He said when he threw the phone against the wall, he said, "Why did I do that?
Yeah.
I can't believe I did that.
Totally regret exactly what I just did."
That's awesome. Well, today we've got a really, really cool guest. We talk with Mark Daniels Jr. Mark is like one of the best dudes you'll ever meet.
Class act.
He is 100%. He is originally from Northern California, grew up fishing with his dad on the California Delta. Is kind of he was a Delta stud, man. He really learned and understood that fishery well. In 2013, he qualified for the TBF FLW National Federation Championship. He went back to Grand Lake and won the tournament. And at that point, the winner of that tournament received free entries, a boat, and expenses. I don't know how much expenses, but expenses towards the FLW tour the next year. So essentially a free ride. It was called Living the Dream Package. Mark went back there, did really well. It might have even been in 2012. It was 12 or 13. Either way, he started a successful career. And, I mean, man, he hasn't looked back since. He's been one of the top dudes on the national tours. He fishes the Major League Fishing Bass Pro Tour now. You know, super well-liked and he's just an awesome guy.
He's definitely made the most out of a great opportunity, for sure.
That's the perfect way to put it, man. Yep. I mean, he's handled, you know, on the business side and the fishing side, he's done exactly what he's needed to do, man. And it's cool to consider him a friend. He's a great guy, and we had a good time talking to him. Hopefully you guys enjoy it.
Mark, can you hear us, man?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Awesome, dude. Right on. Well, hey, thank you for joining us.
Oh, man, anytime, man. I wouldn't have missed it.
You were the man. It's kind of weird because you're not fishing today, dude. I always give you a hard time because I'm just jealous, man. Like, every day I look on Instagram, you're out fishing, practicing, and I'm changing diapers.
Hey, we'll see. That's the important stuff right there. Them years are long gone for me. But you might be speaking a little too soon because I got the boat hooked up right now and me and family getting ready to go hit the lake here in just a minute.
Exactly. Oh, dude. Yeah. That's awesome. You're killing me. What are you guys going to fish for, bass or crappie?
Man, so when I take the kids and the wife and everybody, man, we just kind of do a little bit of whatever bites. So I got crappie jigs rigged up on a few rods. I got a few drop shots and Ned rigs. Stuff like that, stuff that, you know, the likelihood of getting bit and catching something is really high. And yep. we just like to have a couple good family days. The weather's nice in the mid to upper 60s down here in Alabama. And it doesn't get no better than that, man. Nobody's on the lake. Go out, snatch a few, and call it a day.
That's awesome, Mark. Hey, how old are your kids, Mark?
I'm sorry, what was that?
How old are your kids? How many kids do you have? How old are
I got two kids. My son's 6 and 12. And right. So I got a high schooler and one that's getting ready to be a junior high schooler, man. So there's all kind of stuff floating through the air at my house.
Very cool. Are they fishing some of the junior tournaments or tournaments with you or what?
We haven't gotten into the tournament realm just yet. My son's really into basketball. He's on the high school basketball team. My daughter, she still likes to fish a little bit, but she started to get a little girly on me. She's a cheerleader, you know how that goes.
Oh yeah.
But they both do love to fish, man. So I take every opportunity possible to get them out on the lake and mess around.
Right on. Very cool.
Awesome. Yeah. Are you going to be in your new boat today, dude? I saw you just got it rigged up.
I did, man. And that's part of the reasoning I'm going out today as well. Obviously it's a beautiful day. Opportunity to take the fam out, but you know how it is, Josh, when we get these new rigs, man, it takes up time to get dialed in with all the new electronics. This year I'm running a new Garmin Force trolling motor. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts that I like to spend on during the off season, bringing all that together, really tying that in, so when I get out there on game day, I don't have any excuses.
100%, man. Yeah, you're actually pretty you're doing really well, dude. I mean, you're 2 months before the season, already got your boat rigged. A lot of us are way behind on that one. So I think you got a little edge there.
Yeah, you know, I learned a couple of years ago, man. You know, it's like this mad rush to get your boat come like November, December-ish.
Yep.
By the time everybody gets all their stuff, see all your sponsors and all the equipment shows up, man, get put in that line, next thing you know it's January 15th before you got your boat, man. And I just said I ain't gonna deal with that mad rush, and I'll start ordering my boat in like July, and late October, early November, I'm riding around the lake, man.
That's good. That's really, really smart, man. I probably need to get onto that same program. I like that.
Well, I mean, you know, teach his own, man. I mean, you don't have to necessarily do it. It takes me a little more time, I think, than other guys, man. I can't just jump right in it and go. I just really like to learn and understand my boat, all the moving parts, man. And I feel like every year, sell a boat that's completely dialed in. And then we get this new boat and everything's brand new again. And for me, it takes me a long time to get, you know, reacquainted with my rig. So I like to start a little early.
That's cool. Well, dude, we hope you catch him today, man. That sounds like just a perfect afternoon, like you said.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a good time, man. I live right here on Lake Martin, and you've been there, and it's just a prolific spot at a bass fishery. So I'd have a hard time imagining us not catching any, but it is fishing. You never know. But I'd say like the perfect place to introduce people to this bass fishing, man, because there's just bites bad everywhere you go.
That place is loaded with fish, loaded with fish.
It is unreal, man. And I'll tell you, Josh, since we were here in, what was that, 18 for the Elite Series event in February, just 2 years ago, these fish, I'd say, have almost doubled in size.
Really?
The herring are really starting to take off in the lake, and them spotted bass are growing big time, man. I mean, it's taking 17, 18 pounds to win team tournaments right now.
No kidding, dude. It's interesting to see the herring just blowing up like throughout the whole Southeast. It seems like every good spotted bass lake, you know, people say, okay, well, the herring are new to this place 5 years ago, new to this place 7 years ago. And it's putting these spotted bass fisheries on the map, man.
Dude, it is, you know, and some people argue, I get it. It's a non-indigenous species. It's a saltwater species that was introduced. And so there's that whole aspect of it as well. But like many things in what we love to do, all the different aquatic grasses that come from, you know, Brazil and all these other places in the South America, man, to be honest, they make our fisheries what they are. They're like the heartbeat of the fishery after they've been introduced. And I think the same thing is what's happening with the blueback herring in a lot of these lakes where they're not originally from. And Lake Martin is a surefire example, because I'm telling you, there's tons of, you know, 2.5 to 3, 3.25 pound spots all of a sudden that didn't exist just a year or two ago.
Interesting. And are the techniques that you're using changing, or are you catching them on kind of the same stuff that you did 3 years ago?
The technique for me hasn't really changed much, because even though the blueback herring are there and they provide a huge portion of the diet, there's still a ton of threadfin in your typical feed, you know, crawfish, et cetera. I mean, you can still catch them doing the same old traditional things. It's just you'll find the bigger ones are really keyed in on those herring, and trying to figure out where those herring migrate throughout the year is really a tough challenge. But when you find them, you can be sure you're around some big old spotted bass.
That's interesting. Yeah, those herring, they can be really tricky to actually follow and get on. Like, I remember asking Casey Ashley back in the day, I'm like, dude, you know, can you graph them? What do they look like on the graph? Right. I'll never forget him saying, oh, you can't graph them. They're too fat.
He's like, hey, you sound just like him too, dude.
that's
good. Yeah, dude, I'll be honest with you. I know nothing about them. I don't know where they go. I don't know how they move. I just know whenever you're out and you happen to find some and they're feeding on them, hold on.
Exactly. Yeah, no kidding. And the other thing you told me, he goes, you'll know it when you start catching big spots with herring in their throat. I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, that's a good answer, Casey. I love that.
I walked away from that conversation wondering, like, yeah, like, is he messing with me, or, you know, I think it was Fort Martin, to be honest, when we fished there. And I remember he goes, what's the deepest you caught one this week? And then I messed with him. I was like 70 feet, dude. And he's like 70 feet.
Oh, Casey ain't trying to mess around that deep.
he is as solid as they come. That's pretty funny.
Oh, no, there's no doubt. He's solid, dude.
Right on. Well, hey, man. Before we dive too deep into any technical fishing talk, a big part of this story or this show is just stories, fun fishing stories, fun travel stories. I know you room with Wheeler, Connell, and Adrian a lot of times. And I was telling these guys about the teddy bear, dude. explain real quick, if you don't mind, what the teddy bear is and how many days did it ride with you last year?
Man, the teddy bear story, I mean, it's so hilarious, man. this is Adrian Vina's idea, okay? So we're all at the Bassmasters Classic, and it's practice, and we're all standing together, me, Jacob, and Adrian. And we go grocery shopping this week. From the house, we drive down to the grocery store. We're just messing around. And it was like right after Valentine's Day, right? So there's all that leftover roses and chocolates and all the stuff from Valentine's Day. And somehow Adrian then found this big ginormous bear on sale and gets the bright idea that, hey, whoever catches the smallest bag on day one got to ride with this bear.
And it is a big bear. It's the size of a person. Dude,
it's a freaking small human, dude. Like, it's not like a regular bear, bro. It's like literally, it's like four foot 11. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's huge, dude.
Does it have to wear like a jacket? Giant bear.
Hey, we put one on it. Yeah. we put a life jacket on, and his name's Ted. We named him Ted.
Nice.
Yeah, we named him Ted, and Ted's got a lot of love this year, man, because we've kind of took it from, they started at the Classic, Adrian Vina started it out. Actually, the first person to carry Ted, believe it or not, was Edwin Evers.
No way, dude. I can't believe
dude,
for that.
I couldn't believe it either, bro, and they were like, we got Edwin in on. So what we did was, whoever weighed in the smallest bag on the first day of the Classic, so it was me, it was Jacob, Adrian Vina, Jesse Wiggins was in on the deal. Casey Ashley was in on the deal. And somebody talked Edwin Evers into getting in on the deal. How? I couldn't tell you, but he went for it, right?
That's crazy, dude. It was so funny, bro.
And so, of course, we're all going, yeah, Edwin's, he's in on this because he knows he's about to freaking smash him.
Yeah, he's like, there's no way I'll be, he probably thought it was an advantage. He's like, I'm going to get one of these guys at a disadvantage, so I'm in.
Exactly, bro. He's like, I got these fools. They're not ready for this. So he's like, yeah, I'm all about it. So everybody's like, dang, man, Edwin's on them, you know? So we blast off. We fished that day. And we all had a decent day except for Edwin Evers, dude. And I want to say he had like 9 pounds or 10 pounds, something like that. But he had the lowest weight out of the six of us. And so day two, I remember standing on the dock taking pictures and doing the typical, you know, interview stuff, and I look down and there's like 5 cameras on Edwin, and he has Ted strapped to his back seat pole, dude. Oh, it was so funny. It was freaking hilarious. I still to this day can't believe that Edwin did it, man. But hey, he was a man of his word and he rolled with him, man. So shout out to Edwin Evers on that.
And that he is. For the listeners, Edwin is probably the most serious hardcore competitor on tour. Like, That dude does not mess around. So I don't know how I missed him not having the teddy bear, dude. Like, I don't know how I didn't see that, but that's amazing.
I want to say Wheeler somehow on his YouTube channel got like all documented. I'd have to go through in there and dig around, but it's around somewhere. There's somewhere you can catch Edwin running down the Tennessee River with a 95-pound bear strapped to the back of his
seat. Need a lot of camouflage duct tape to keep that to a four, right?
Seriously, dude.
Going 70 miles an hour, I love it.
Yeah, it's probably slowed his boat down, yeah. Dude.
Oh, for sure. The wind drag on that thing is unreal. I can promise you.
That's funny. How much would that thing weigh after it rained? Did you ever have it on the boat like on a rainy day or something?
You know, I don't think we did. I don't think Ted made any rainy days. But, dude, we thought about that. We considered that. We're like, man, if he gets ejected out of the boat, right, we got to go get Ted.
You got to go get him, dude, right? That's it.
Yeah, we got to go get Ted. But all of a sudden, now Ted goes from 90 pounds. He's 220.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Getting him back in.
Oh, man.
I'm up in some rain gear.
That's right.
True. Yeah.
So we're talking right now. Check this out. We're thinking about getting Ted jersey for next year, right? And putting all of our sponsors on Ted. And then, like, at the end of the year, like, raffling off for something, for a charity or something like that.
Yeah, that's a cool idea.
That's a great idea.
I think that'd be a good little idea. You know, get some extra love to the sponsors, of course. And I just think the fan base eat that up just because it's something different. And of course, it's funny as hell. So who wouldn't want to partake in that?
It's brilliant, dude. I love it. Who's got him now? Who's got him these days?
Adrian has him, I believe. Yeah. It's like Adrian's kid, man. You know, it was his idea. He got him. He's hanging on to him. I'm surprised I hadn't seen him on social media out in the salt with him yet, but he's been keeping him indoors.
Yeah, he's got to rest up. He's got a big year coming up. Ted does.
Yeah, he does. He got to get ready for the season.
So Adrian, he's in good hands. Adrian doesn't have any kids or anything. So yeah, he probably takes good care of them.
I'd imagine he's well taken care of, man. There's no doubt.
That's hilarious. So when you guys are on the road, do you guys like in our previous house, we would play some pranks with our previous crew before Lucas started camp, and he was always trying to like scare us and prank us and stuff like that. It's a lot more laid back now in the house that we've got. I stay with Gerald Spore, Roy Hawk, and James Elam, and we're all about just chilling, man. We're just a bunch of like old men and 30-year-old bodies, you know.
But, yeah, that's right.
do you guys mess with each other when you're on the road? Do you ever play pranks on each other?
You know, we ain't big on pranks, and I think it's for no particular reason. It just hasn't come up, dude. I mean, I'm all about it. You know what I mean? It just hasn't come up yet. You might have just sparked something right now with the idea. But man, what we like to do, we do other stuff. Like whenever we get to the destination, we try to find something silly, fun, or crazy to do. Like we'll go like miniature golfing or, you know, stuff like that. Go shoot some hoops, like in the arcades, or, you know, stuff like that. We don't really prank on each other as of yet. I think I might have to implement that this year.
Yeah, until now, right?
Right. Yeah. Until right now. So, but yeah, now we don't big on pranks, man. We just like to do stuff and just keep the energy positive, man. So we spend a lot of time, like I said, going places, having a good time, man, and just staying positive throughout the week, man, because that fishing, as you guys all know, it'll wear you down, man, especially when you're having a tough week.
100%, you know, and with the no information rule that we've got now, it's, you know, we can't even really talk about fishing with our buddies.
Right.
So at least you guys, that's really smart. You guys get out of the house and do some non-fishing stuff, man. And you guys can still have some fun together.
No doubt, man. That's what we have to do, man. I mean, like you said, you got four fishermen, but you can't talk about fishing. You can talk about anything you want except for fishing, you know? So it's like,
and silence descends upon you guys, right? It's like, well, we got nothing.
Exactly. So it's like, let's just probably leave the house and do something else. Yeah. So that's been the deal for us, man. But I don't know. I'm liking this prank idea.
That's, dude, Justin's deal was he would just scare us all the time.
Really?
Like a 3-year-old, dude. He would hide behind corners and stuff all the time. He just walk around the corner, you go, ah!
That's hella funny, dude. For some reason, I can't visually see Justin doing this, but
he's so serious. But the one time I got him, the funny thing is, I got him one time and he was so pissed. Of course, you know.
Yeah, dish it out,
of
course. But take it,
yeah.
No, they're north, right. Two-way streets.
That's right. Yeah. Revenge, man. Hey, it happens, and it ain't never good when it happens.
No, it's not, dude. They're just not expecting it. That's cool, dude. Appreciate those stories. That's pretty awesome. We got we'll let you roll on a minute here. Just one question that we get a lot on the show. The show's new. This is like gonna be our 7th or 8th episode, but we've already had several questions about tidal fishing. I was talking to you, texting you this earlier, like, I say the viewers want to know, but I also want to know too. Dude, what tips do you have for someone who's maybe just moved to a place with tidal water, or going for, you know, their first or second time to fish a tournament on tidal water?
Yeah, man. So, you know, just kind of a little bit of a backstory if your listeners don't already know, Josh, but of course I grew up on a California Delta, you know that, but grew up fishing tidal waters, love fishing tidal waters. And I wouldn't necessarily say it's a strength of mine. It's just something that I'm very familiar with because I've been around it pretty much all my life. And I think a lot of times people let the tide dictate too much of what they're trying to accomplish. So for a beginner, what I would suggest is trying to fish a particular area throughout the tide, right? Meaning whether it's coming in, falling, slack, or in between. If you kind of get a well-rounded idea of what's going on through all those periods, it helps you have a better understanding to lure selection, where the fish move and go. Then that way you're not guessing when you pull up on. And this is for like super beginner, you know, as you advance and you start to become more familiar with the body of water, then I would recommend doing what we call running the tide. And that's more of a strategy where it's a very specific timing on a specific place type of a deal. But that's far more advanced. But again, I just think the number one thing I think people do, they let the tide get in their mind. It's like, oh, you know, I need to be here at this tide, here at this tide, here at that tide. Just pick you a area and fish it throughout the entire tide and see what you learn, you know, as a starting point.
That's beautiful. That's super good advice, man. And it is. It's intimidating going to tidal fishery for the first time. With your experience at the Delta, I know you've won a bunch of tournaments at the Delta. And it's just a massive body of water. And that's common, too. Like, most of these tidal fisheries are huge. So if you're showing up for the first time, you're not only intimidated by the tide, but you're intimidated by the vastness of the fishery. Absolutely. And, yeah, man, your first day that you're there, if you lose confidence the first day, it could make for a really long week. So I love that advice of getting into an area. And when you go to pick an area like this, you know, just something to add, if you're new to a body of water, but it's a body of water that prior tournaments have been on, I would suggest picking an area that's well known for producing tournament winning bags. You know what I mean? If it's the Delta or, you know, the Potomac River or something like that, read a bunch of articles, pick a creek that you hear over and over again. You hear that name over and over again, make that the creek you pick and do just what you said.
No doubt, man. I mean, AKA community holes, and people downgrade community holes for whatever the reason may be, but community holes are an essential piece of tournament fishing on every level. Even at the height of what me and you do, Josh, fishing on the Bass Pro Tour, community areas always play a role, if not win the event on a community play. So don't shy away from those areas, man. And these are places, you know, when I show up to a new place, first thing we do, we hop on the internet, man. Let's look at some very general information. Start there and then expand from that. Don't be afraid of going just because everybody and their brother fishes that area. They fish that area because it's good. They're not just there just because. I think a lot of people, they overshadow it, you know, and they want to get away from that. But I think you need to kind of try to understand it a little better. And I think that might even help you as well. When you expand and move on to other areas, you'll find similar structures, habitat, you know, what have you, you know, just use it as a building block.
I like it, man. I like it. That's great. You guys have any other title questions for Mark?
I think that's just a great, like, one-on-one level, man. I think you could unpackage that and take it from there. That makes sense.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's, you know, and I do that on title fisheries myself, man. Like you said, Josh, the Potomac or James River, you know, I've been there once or twice. And so it's all brand new for me when I show up and you know, this is kind of how I jump into it.
100%. Yeah. I mean, those are big bodies of water. They're intimidating. And you know, you're getting you're going to the community hole. That's kind of the template, right? But you're going to fish it all day and put your own spin on it and, you know, fill in the gaps your own way, kind of fish it your own style. But you got to start with something. You got to start in an area that you are confident has some fish in it. Otherwise, man, you're second guessing every single thing you do. You're second guessing your bait selection. You're second guessing, is this the right tide? Everything, you know, and, you know, all you want to really – If you know you're in a good area, there's just less that you have to figure out and think about throughout the day.
That's it, man. Yeah, it's just really basic, man. Basic information, you know. Start there and then grow from that, man. I think, and you can apply that to any fishery, but the biggest key on the tidal deal is spending the time there throughout the tides. So you know what it looks like on high, you know what it looks like on low. You know where these fish should position on the incoming, and you know where they should position on the outgoing. And then that way you have a really good understanding of that area. And then you can move on from there.
It makes perfect sense. I like it, man. I like it. And it's tough to do sometimes too. Like, you know, you go into the day with maybe that mindset and you fish for 3 hours and maybe you're not doing great, and that's when the demons start creeping into the back of your head. You know, I know I said I was going to fish here all day, but maybe I need to go somewhere else. But you got to stick through it, man. And like you said, just fish the whole tide cycle. I like that.
Yeah, man. I think that's the, you know, and then I, you know, even on the Delta, right? Some of the greatest fishermen that came locally from where I'm from, you had two different guys, right? You had guys that ran the tides, which I was one of the, I'm one of those kind of a fisherman. I like to run the tides. But then you also had guys that were very successful at fishing through the tides in the same area. So they never left the area like a French track per se. They fished it incoming, high, outgoing, low. They fished it all day long. They were very successful at it because they understood where those fish would move to throughout the entire course of the tide. And so there's just totally two different approaches. One's not better than the other. It's all personal preference. But I think at the same time, that's the best place to start, you know?
Yeah, and it makes sense. You'd run tides on a body of water maybe you know a little bit more intimately and have some experience on, but just showing up and saying this is a spot, hitting it that way makes more sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no doubt. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, dude, yeah, yeah, thanks for that breakdown. That's killer.
That's my little 2 cents.
Yeah. That's cool, dude. Hey, that's 2 cents a lot of people want to hear. So thanks. Before we let you go, man, do you have any other, you know, silly travel stories or anything like that that you can share? Or,
roach motels, bed bugs. You know, we have this weird thing for that.
Oh, God. I hadn't had bed bugs yet. Thank God. Dude, I'm so scared of them. You guys have no clue.
Well, prior to the Airbnb era, right, there weren't as many good options as you guys have now, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I've stayed in some super crazy ones, but I've never encountered bed bugs, dude. Just even saying bed bugs scares me. Like, I'm okay. I'm shaking right now. Yeah.
Dude, we're lucky. I think we're lucky to not have them. And I'll be honest, I don't do a good job of really checking. Sometimes I'm so tired. When you get into a hotel, do you give it a good once over before you crawl into bed?
So check this out. So I, prior to fishing, I worked in agriculture. I was an inspector, right?
That's right.
Okay. So the office I worked out of, Solano County Department of Agriculture, we would get people walking in all the time with different insects for identification. You know, they go, oh man, you know, I got a bunch of these, around the house. And I've seen it all. Okay. And occasionally you get somebody to come in with a little Ziploc bag with 3, 4, 5 bugs in there. And they're like, man, I got these things all over my house. They're running, blah, blah, blah. We don't know what this is. You know, can you identify it? Right. And I'd be the biologist on duty that day. And I'd have to take a peek and do it. As soon as they hand me that bag, I'd know right off the bat. I'm like, OMG, this ain't good.
Get the tent out.
Oh, I'm like, hey, you need to call somebody like ASAP because this is not good. So saying that to say, yes, every time I stay at a hotel, the one thing I check. So bed bugs are attracted to heat. That's why they come out at night, because when you lay in the bed, your body temperature warms up the bed. They sense that, they come out.
How about this? See, now we're really learning something, dude.
Yeah, man. This old bed bug 101. So this is what you can do. A couple different ways you can check for them. So you can immediately pull off the sheets in the bed liner, and the crease in between the mattress, the seam where they seam the material together, there's like a rim that runs around the bed, right?
Okay.
That's a notorious place where they hang out. That's where they
bed bugs.
Yep, that's where they hang out. That's one place that they hang out. So what I do is I pull the covers off, I pull all the bedding off, and I check that seam right there. Another place is the outlets where you plug your phone in or your whatever.
Huh.
In those holes, bed bugs, they will wait in there until nighttime and come out. And a lot of times you can see the fecal matter on the outside of the outlet.
Like that's a bunch of crazy.
Yeah, dude. But little red or brown dots, and they're tiny little splatterly looking little dots. Will be all around the outlets, and that's bed bug.
That's a bed bug toilet, huh?
Dude, that's great. Exactly. So you haven't run across it. You're just aware of this information, but you haven't been in a hotel where you've seen that.
I have not been in a hotel, thank God, where I have seen that and check every time. Trust me. But these are just things that you can do if you're unsure. And then the last but not least, I'll give you guys one more tip on bed bugs. This is sad that I know all this, but
please, yeah, dude. No, yeah, we need these tips.
So you can plug in a iron, right? So like most hotels have an iron, right? Okay. Plug the iron in, let it get hot, then unplug it. It'll still be pretty hot. And you just set it on the bed. It's kind of like a trap. It's kind of like a, it's like bait, dude. It's like putting on live bait. And you put that iron on the bed, and if there's bed bugs, they will be attracted to that heat and they'll come out.
The Man. Funniest part about all this is Josh is going to be doing this.
Well, maybe at Key Hotel, you know. Yeah. We've got, yeah.
We could, dude, just yeah. above it, it'd be money.
I'm telling you, man, them things are the most. I love everything outdoors. I love animals. I love insects. I love snakes. I love everything. Okay. That's one thing I got zero love for, the bed bug.
You got to wonder why God made something like that, right? Like, we must have done something really bad to have him create a bug that's just designed to, like, come out at night and just, like, get all cozy in your warm spots. That's pretty gross.
Oh, dude. Yeah. It's crazy, man. Gosh, I guess they got to make a living, too, but good Lord.
Fair enough. Well, that's good to see, man. We'll be plugging in irons from here on out.
Yeah, man. You guys don't – hey, listen, you do – and the other thing, they'll cost you thousands of dollars to get rid of if you can't – you know, if you got them, it's crazy.
That is no joke. I have a friend who just went through a very long battle with those little bastards, and it's expensive, exhausting, sucks. And like, if you go to a hotel, they'll just hop on and ride with you, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And they get in place where you'd never think, and before you know it, I mean, there's an infestation, dude, in your house, and it's
And they don't
make time again. They don't pay rent, dude. They're takers.
Yeah, that's right. They have the audacity to join you. At least they could chip in.
Right. No, they just want to suck you dry. That's about it.
The next tournament, dude, our first tournament next year, we're gonna get to the first tournament morning, and there's gonna be a story about a big hotel fire, man. It's gonna be from leaving the iron on the bed for too long.
Yeah, how fireproof is that mattress?
Oh, good.
Ted will burn the place down. There's gonna be a fire at the local hotel.
That's for bro, Josh Bertrand. You might get arrested for arson, bro.
Yeah.
Probably so. Why was the iron, you know, that would almost look like you did it on purpose, dude. You know, why would you put an iron on the bed? But we'd go back to this podcast and I'd get off, dude.
Right.
Yeah, it's documented. It's documented. Anybody might come looking for me. I don't know if this is a good idea.
Yeah, if you're listening, don't put irons on the bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't. Or if you do, make sure you unplug them. I did say that.
Unplug okay, right on. That's good.
Yeah, I just saved myself.
That's the indemnification.
Oh, man.
Well, hey, dude, we'll let you roll. We know you want to get out there on the water, so just know that we're all jealous of you for, again, already having your nice new boat and going fishing in it, and we're going to live vicariously through you and finish this podcast.
Awesome, fellas, man. Well, hey, bro, I appreciate you having me on, man. It was a great time, as I knew it would be prior to getting on, man. So keep doing your thing, man. I appreciate you guys having me on as a guest, man, and tight lines until I see you guys.
We can't thank you enough, dude. Right, it's been awesome.
Thanks, Mark, brother.
Right on, fellas. Y'all take care.
You too, man.
See you, man.
Thanks so much for listening, guys. Mark is such a good dude, and he was so much fun to chat with. We appreciate all the ratings and reviews we've received on iTunes so far. If you've got any questions or topics you'd like us to talk about, please leave them in the iTunes review section or drop any of us a message on Facebook or Instagram. We'll see you next week.